Okay, everybody, we'll get started straight away. We do have one written question, and then we'll get on to the issue.
Okay. So this question is, when an EPOA is in place, is it possible to appoint a backup person to take over in the event the primary person dies first? So if you have an enduring power of attorney, if you as the donor has made an enduring power of attorney and appointed an attorney, but there is no backup attorney, that attorney cannot appoint someone else for the donor. Does that make sense? And does that answer the question?
Yeah.
They can, because the enduring power of attorney has to be made by the donor when the donor has capacity. But if the donor lacks capacity and the attorney is acting, and the attorney no longer wanted to act or whatever, there is a procedure that you could do to go to the court to then get another attorney, but it's not an EPOA, but it's a... Yeah, does that make sense? So there are ways and mechanisms, and that's the sort of thing that we could potentially assist with. So, yeah. No other questions then? Was that it? Got them all answered? I did have... Not very good with my presentations. I don't seem to have a bullet point ending. And I did to that one, and he got me off before I ended it. But anyway, it was this that I found. It was an uncredited quote, which I thought was applicable. So this is the finish up the last session. End of life decisions should not be made at the end of life. Anyway, and to start off with this one. So now wills. Now I just can't understand why you would not have wills on your bucket list. Why you would not have a will? My straight into it when I give this presentation to people was, why would you not have a will? You are going to die. Sorry about that. But anyway, once again, I thought I'd look up a nice little quote. And forget that. This is what I'm starting with now. Death is inevitable. Some might even say it's a terminal inconvenience or a reason to suddenly stop sinning. All jokes aside, death is one of the few sure things in life, and is also something all of us have in common. So that's probably a bit lighter than saying we're all going to die. So that was a quote by Brian Oldwolf. Okay, so I just thought I'd start with that. So anyway, another what should be on your bucket list? Definitely a will. I've just explained why. Why would you not have one? If someone wants to give me an argument to that question, why you would not have a will? Anyone got an idea why?
Well, you're not about to
worry about it. Well, yes, and I've got a good story about that too.
So, someone did say to me they wouldn't need a will because if you die without a will, the law has a decent way of sorting it out.
Oh, a decent, long, expensive way of sorting it out, and lots of stress to family and friends and or family or whoever is going to get it. And once again, this is something I had a call about just yesterday. I saw this as well and thought this was quite good. We should talk about our final arrangements so the kids aren't burdened with them. Why should we care? That'll be their problem. Right, well, at least we've talked about it. So to bother with that anymore. Once again, may go through the slideshow, but you'll have that thereafter or on the website. So, unlike enduring powers of attorney, wills only come into effect when you die, and you appoint an executor who would look after your affairs when you pass away. So, EPOA, donor, attorney, will, you appoint executive. Two very different documents, which I hope you're now well aware of. So they only come into play when you pass away. A couple of things I do want to make you aware of, though, is that if you own assets jointly, so if you have joint bank accounts or you own your house jointly as joint tenants, it automatically passes to the survivor upon your death. So it doesn't form part of your estate. Okay, does that make sense? So me and my husband have got a joint bank account. I die, automatically goes to him. Don't need a will anyway for that. So for some people, that would probably be the only reason you would not have a will is everything's owned jointly. And that would only be if you're on your first husband with your first lot of kids. If blended families, you're probably not provided for them, and you should be, so that could be a problem. So if you are first married, same kids, everything's jointly owned, technically probably wouldn't need a will. Yes?
Does that also apply to common law marriages?
Yes, so common law marriages, whether or not, getting technical right from the beginning, whether or not you need to provide for someone depends on the duration of a relationship,
over here, not whether you're married or divorced or whatever. Okay, yeah, it depends on the duration of a relationship as to whether you should provide for them in your will without getting too technical. So we'll maybe go into that a bit more as we go along. I'll cover off some basic things first. So joint assets automatically pass to the survivor. So if you've also got a joint bank account that you opened with one of your children so that she could have access to it, and you've got four other children, that would automatically go all to that child. Okay, won't form part of the estate. Hopefully they would distribute it if they should. You have life insurance policies. Some life insurance policies, if you pass away and have been paid on death, may not form part of your estate. If you have a beneficiary named, it may automatically go to the beneficiary, not form part of your estate. You know what I mean by estate, right? So if you pass away, all your assets, liabilities is what we call your estate. So you would need to check, if you want to check your life insurance policy to see if it forms part of your estate or if it's paid to someone. So if people ring me up and they've had a split in their relationship, the first thing I tell them to do is change your EPLA and change your life insurance policy. If you've got your ex named as the beneficiary, he might die tomorrow and he gets your life insurance policy. Get those. So another relationship property advice info there too. Also, what you might not be aware of, and once again, this is a situation that would arise when you passed away, so technically might not need to worry, but a lot of people will probably worry about this when I tell you about it. Say I pass away and I leave my lots of money, if I had it, to my daughter, and my daughter puts it into her joint bank account with her partner, it becomes relationship property. If he then splits from her the week later, he gets half of that inheritance. If you've got a daughter or a son-in-law, might not like too much, you might want to perhaps discuss that when you make the will, or discuss it with your daughter, because a lot of people don't realise, okay, I'm getting mum's inheritance. Can you provide a bank account number? The solicitor will ask. You give them a joint bank account number. It becomes joint property in their relationship. You've passed away, but would you like it that your son-in-law, who you never trusted, has now got your money and the inheritance? Something to think about there. Okay.
If you put it in a separate account and never used it, it would still be with the family, wouldn't it?
If I pass away and it goes into my daughter's separate account, it becomes her money.
Yeah, if you say your mother left you money,
yeah,
and if so long as you didn't use it,
why would I not use it?
I suppose. Yeah. Well, I was having a marriage split right when my mum was dying, and my ex was busy trying to say no, put it in together.
Yeah, but he wasn't knew what he was doing.
And fortunately, I looked up the CD and I said, nah, I'll just leave it in mine. Well, I would have lost half of that.
Has anyone, personal question, it would be just be interesting, if you have received an inheritance from someone, did the lawyer say that it could become joint property when they asked for your account number, or did they...
I didn't think they did.
Yeah, so that's why I'd like to say that in these talks, that, you know, realise that your inheritance could go to... one, I don't know why you wouldn't want to use it, but but if it becomes intermingled into joint relations, so once again, if it becomes, if you buy a fridge for your house with the inheritance, that's become relationship property, so you can't... Yeah, so if it becomes intermingled, becomes relationship property, but if you keep it separately and you just, you know that that's, but you're not here, like I said, it's good, it's a food for thought.
In a blended family again.
Sorry?
In a blended family.
Yes.
And you've got one grandchild, and there are other children in the second marriage. Can you specify that you want your money go to that child?
Yes, you can. You can put what you like. This lady was asking if she could put specify what money went to what child. Okay, so going back to basics, you can put what you... So your will is what your wishes upon your death, what you would like to happen to your assets and liabilities. And so your wishes can be followed. The reason, actually, my last sort of bullet point after the inheritance to become joint property is reasons to use a lawyer. Because a lot of people, can't I just write it out myself? Well, yeah, you can, but if you left all of your money to one child or one grandchild and you hadn't provided as per our laws under the Family Protection Act or Relationship Property Act, and then a person could contest that will, and depending on the advice they had given, may be successful. So I'll put that into layman's terms. I'm going to make a will, and I've got three children, and I'm going to leave it to two of my children. And so I've made it with a lawyer, and the lawyer said to me, well, you really should be leaving it to three of your children. I said, no, one of my children, and I guess this is realistic these days, it's not my children, I haven't got children, by the way, it could have a drug problem, and I'm not giving them my inheritance because it's all going to go to them. He goes, okay, that's fair enough. So he puts that with my will. We'll make some notes in his note-taking. So then I then pass away, and this child who I didn't include could say, right, I'm going to contest the will. And so they go and see a lawyer and they contest the will. If it goes towards court, my lawyer, who I made the will, would be able to present my case for me as to why I didn't do what I did. So if you did that at home, if you made an at-home will and you didn't follow, you know, leave it to all your children, the contesting of it by that family member would be less likely, because it could be argued that the will maker was not given legal advice as to what they should do and why. Does that make sense? So whereas the lawyer will cover it off from your grave, they could present the story as to why you did what they did. They may also suggest leaving something rather than nothing. So provide them some, but not the same. I was just actually going through my files. We had a bit of a quiet day in the office, and I was reading one. I thought, well, this is interesting. I had the child. There was a lady died. She had three children, and the mother had left all the money to a dog home. And so she said, "Well, what are my rights?" I said, "Well," she said, "the other two siblings don't want to borrow it. They're rich enough, but can I contest it?" And I said, "Well, you can contest it, but you'd want to realise what, you know, find out what's in it." I think there was quite a lot. It was about at least 100,000. So that's why you need a lawyer, I guess. Firstly, okay, does that make sense? Because if you're not leaving it as normal, and that would come down to, I will come back to your question, sorry, that will come down to blended families as well. If you're on your second husband, you want to make sure, so if you're in a second relationship and you've got kids to separate, you've got your own kids and they've got, you want to provide for both of them, right? Because if I'm onto my second husband, house is owned jointly, automatically goes to him, my kids will get nothing. So your house ownership should be tenants in common and whatever shares, so that when he dies, my half of the house could be a life interest and then left to my children. So they're especially blended families. Does that sort of make sense? Your question?
I think you just answered it.
Oh, look at that mind reader.
Where a property is owned by my wife and I as joint tenants in common. One of us dies. I assume by what you're saying that neither children from neither family can make any claim on that. The survivor has sole right to decide what to do with that property. If you want to stay in it, if you want to sell it, whatever. Is that correct or not?
Yeah. Did you all hear that without me, okay, repeating it, but I'll cover it off in my answer. One thing you need to know, if you own a house jointly, the first thing you need to check is how you own it. Okay, so usually if it's first relationship, you would own it as tenants in common, okay, so which just means it would be April and Mary Catman. And so if I pass away, automatically goes to Mary Catman, okay? So that's as tenants in common. If I was on to my second husband and I thought we then decided, well, we bought half this house each, and so if anything happens to me, the lawyer, and once again, this is not always when you go and buy a house something that the lawyers will discuss. How do you want to own it? It should be owned as joint tenants. So joint tenants as to a half. Getting it mixed up. No, joint tenants is when you own it together. The tenants, but anyway, it's two ways. Tenants common is to a half share each. So that I technically have a half share of that house. So that half share of the house has to be depicted in my will what I want done with it. Okay, so I own half of that house. Doesn't automatically go, like I said before, as a, and so what I could do, and these are options, and this is what your lawyer would discuss with you without trying to get too technical, is I could discuss, right, I could give my husband a life interest so that he can live in there, as much as he's alive, once he dies, the house gets sold, my half goes to my children and his half. So there's those options that you would be wanting to be discussed, because you don't want to make sure that your children... Because if I got into a relationship and then I die and it's automatically gone to the partner and my children are here and they've just lost their inheritance, they should need to contest the will. Well, it wouldn't be in the will, but they'd want to make steps to see if it was right that they had half the house. Did the lawyer advise them when they bought the house about the options? Okay, does that make sense? So that's options. And the life interest in a house has got a bit more trickier lately too, because a lot of, with the rest home ownerships, if you own occupancy right agreements or whatever, don't allow you. So I had a lady, once again, real life story, rang me up the other day. She said, obviously, blended family, husband had died. She was living in this villa because she'd been given a life interest. She can't cope with it anymore. She doesn't want to live there anymore, but she can't sell it. If she's been given a life interest, it may allow you to sell and buy another house. May do, or it may just be until you out of that house before the beneficiaries want their half. Or, and even if it does allow her to buy another house, she couldn't buy an occupational right in the rest home, because that's not the same ownership as a free home. Unless all the kids that said, okay, we're happy that stepmom, if you sell that house, we're going to let you use that money and we'll set an agreement up that when that goes, then we get it. But, you know, what are we going to get families that do that, or children from they're going to want their money, aren't they? And rightly so. It's an economic climate. They probably can't afford not to have the money. So those are things that you need to consider if you're in blended families about what's going to happen with the money. Does that make any questions in that respect?
I thought the woman always spent the money.
Women always spend the money. Rightio. So, so the other main reason is why you would have a will, if that's not put it straight to you, is if you have an asset over $15,000 and you passed away and you haven't made a will, letters of administration will need to be applied for through the courts, and you will need a solicitor to do that. So, if you have $15,000 in KiwiSaver, which a lot of people, this is the problem again. Just because you we don't know when we're going to die. A 20-year-old can quite easily have over $15,000 in KiwiSaver now. They pass away, you can't access their KiwiSaver because they didn't leave a will, and it's over $15,000. So letters of administration need to apply for. You get a lawyer. The lawyer does it. You pay for your funeral. You pay for the lawyer's fees. You've got nothing left over. Okay. Plus the stress of what do we do now? I get calls every day. My mother, father, brother, sisters died, didn't leave a will, we can't get their KiwiSaver. What do we do? So that's why, for the sake of a few $100, if you can, I know, we don't do wills by community law, by the way, we only give information, but if you can afford to get a will, and if you've only got very little, so even if you've got less than $15,000, or maybe you've only got your KiwiSaver, that would be the time where I would say that, yes, okay, do an at-home will yourself. Because it's less at risk, right? Because if you've only got $20,000, you've got three kids, and one of them's going to contest it, it's going to be nothing to contest by the time they've paid their funeral account. Does that make sense? So that would be the only time. We would get the referrals, like I said, from hospice for enduring powers of attorney. We can't do wills, but I know that we just say, we'll do an at-home will if you've got nothing. But you want, at peace to know that you've done one, hopefully, and that will stand up in court. We aren't like America. Some people get the odd thing that we don't sit down for reading of wills over here. So, obviously in your will that you can put that you wish to be buried or cremated, but usually that's already been done by your time your will is out. So if you do have specific funeral instructions, which you'll be learning about in the upcoming weeks, let whoever you know as your executor or your family know what you want, because we don't get out the will and say, right, we're going to sit down and listen to what Mary had written in her will. Usually it's all been dealt with before then. So your will is meant to reflect your wishes. You can put anything you want in there, but like I said, if you don't cover certain responsibilities as a family member, it could be contested. If you've got blended families, listen to the lawyers and, you know, how you should leave stuff so that your children, if you've got children, separate relationships get covered off. I would not go into great detail about your chattels. Now, if this dispute arises after you pass away about your book collection or your CD collection or whatever it is collection you've got, they're not going to want to know about it, okay, because it's nothing to do with them. I thought, I heard this and I reckon it was a great, I wish if we had another lockdown, not that I want one, this is what I recommend you do. Get a load of sticky dots, label everything in your house as to what, who you want to go to. Okay, and I heard that someone said that they'd done this and their family and the kids come around and they go around the house every time they visit to see what they're and so you can put in your will to just that a list of my chattels. If I've made a list upon my death, my chattels can be distributed as per that list. So I've got a list with my will, so I don't label everything, you know, what I want to, but I've got a few things that I want friends and family to get. I get that out every year, and I haven't spoke to her, so she goes off the list, and I just redo it, and I send it to my lawyer, and I don't have to change my will, okay? So, but some people, that some of those things are the most better belongings, aren't they? You know, about what, you know, giving stuff away like that. So, so you can just do a list. But I think the sticky dot idea was a fabulous idea. So if you haven't got a will, when you pass away, over 15,000 in assets, it just gets messy. And I hear it all the time, and there'll be one dominant family member, whether it be that favourite child or not, that wants to take control. They'll want to do things. Will it be what you would have wanted, or will it be what they want? There'll be arguments. You say, oh, they won't argue. It does happen. They will, when money comes out. So I just strongly recommend that you, it just, yeah, saves a lot of hassle with what you would want and who does what, etc., etc. What have we got here? Yeah, I think the biggest thing is if you've got over $15,000 in assets, because that's where it gets messy, and say then someone has to try and deal with your affairs. What else is there? Let me have a flick through, see what I've missed. So your point is executor and administrator, they're the people that just look after things for you. Technically, the banks do freeze your accounts. Like you say, your EPOA would cease. They won't be able to access your bank account, and that's where your executor kicks in. What also actually is a lot is a misconception, is people will go along to a lawyer right now, make a will, and that lawyer will hold the original will, usually in their deeds and a fire safe thing, etc., etc. And then my mum dies, so I go to that lawyer, and because she owns property, or if she's got over 15,000, you will need to use a lawyer to deal with the estate administration. You don't have to, I know you're technically going to be the person passed away, but you don't have to use that lawyer. I can use, if they're not named in their will as the executor, I can take that will away and get someone else to do it. But people have this misconceived idea that they have to use the lawyer where the will is held to do the estate administration, but that's, doesn't have to be that way. If you don't want to use them, you don't have to. So just remember that, and perhaps let your family know if, you know, my will's here, but if you want to use another lawyer, you can do.
Actually, I've just done my will with a public trust, and I have all my payments by direct credit every month, like for my rates, and I don't like not paying my rates. She said that they will take over the payment of the rates and things like that. So that's taken a lot of pressure off me. You know,
that's when you pass away.
Hmm?
That's when you pass away.
Yeah. She'll take over more of my...
So they've been appointed the executor?
What was that?
Have they been... Oh, you don't tell me. I was just saying if they... So whoever's appointed the executor of your estate can do as much and as little as they like. So say my mum makes me the executor of her will. I've got some knowledge, obviously, of estate administration, so I could say, right, I'm going to contact all the banks, I'm going to collect everything in, and I'm going to deal with paying whatever I need to pay, because I'm the executor, I could do that. Or I could go to the lawyer, because I'd need to go to one because she owns a property, and they could just say, we can do all that. And they're not the executor, but they're the legal firm that I'm going to appoint to administer the estate. What you also need to be aware of is sometimes, and I get this a lot, I had it recently with a family member, I'm just going to do all that myself. Yes, but their lawyer will still have to deal with certain aspects, and if they're chasing you up or trying to put stuff back together that you haven't put right, lawyers will charge on a time and attendance basis in an estate. Don't forget, they do this all the time. They've got their procedures, they've got portals on the computer where they just fire things in and things come back to the banks and everything, you know what I mean? They can just lodge their certificates and everything and get back all that information. Probably cheaper than them trying to sift through what information you're trying to do as a layperson dealing with an estate. Okay, so they might, you might think you're saving money, but not technically really in the end. So the executor or the lawyer's firm, so you have the executor and the law firm will do as much as the executor wants them to do. But I say be aware that if you're going to try and deal with it yourself, sometimes it can cost you more than every time you ring that lawyer up, charge up. It's going to come out of your beneficiary's money.
So if you're the person who is doing the will and they do not live locally, say South Island, would it be better for them to get a lawyer down where they live?
So who, sorry, you're making a will and who's the person that's not local?
Our daughter lives in Christchurch.
Is she the executor?
Yes.
Yeah, no, there's no reason. These days with technology, that you can't have your executor. Like I say, she could uplift the will and get a lawyer down there to do it.
Yeah, but it really doesn't make any difference.
No.
Okay.
No, they can have whoever they like.
You don't pay.
Yes?
Does the will override
a
family trust?
Oh, that's a tricky question. Does the will override a family trust? They're both very separate documents that deal with things differently.
Okay.
So if a house is owned by a family trust, then it's not owned by you and it's not your estate. So it really depends what's in the family trust and what the family, what the trust documents say. So they don't necessarily override. They're two different documents that would deal with things separately. Okay? So for those of you that have trust, which is a whole other legal education session, governed by the Wills Act. If you don't have a will, then it will be, and this is another story I had yesterday, if you don't have a will, then your assets will be distributed as per the Administration Act. So I had a lady ring up yesterday. She was one of three children, and her father was in a relationship when he passed away. So a relationship with more than 3 years, okay, that's when you would have a claim, if you'd been living together for more than 3 years. He had no will, and so the partner... What was interesting is that her father died about 2 years ago, and she said the partner applied for letters of administration, so went to a lawyer, which is usual, and now that they were only getting two-thirds. What I did think was odd is that the children didn't know until 3 weeks ago that, and this death had happened 2 years ago. Don't know what quite happened there. But she'd applied for letters of administration, and she sent the children saying, right, you will get two-thirds. So the spouse, because or partner, because she'd been in a relationship for more than 2 years, will be entitled to something, and then the children would get their share. So Administration Act would depicts what happens in the event you don't have a will, and that might not be how you want it to happen. So that's the laws that govern that. Here we go. What's important is that you can only get your affairs in order as much as you can. Once again, you will need a will. You will pass away, so there's no doubts there. It's not like an insurance policy. This is a given. But you can only control so much, and this is a sweet little story I had. When I not long started a community law, I had this dear old man come into the office, and I am being judgmental. He didn't look like he had much money at all by the way he was dressed or whatever. But apparently he was a bachelor, had no children, had three cats, and he was loaded. And he wanted to make a will, and he wanted to know what he should do with his cats. And apparently the cats were elderly like him, and they were expensive to keep because of their medication and everything. And he said, and we can't advise about wills, so he said, well, what should I do? And I said, well, we just sort of went through, I can't advise, but I can discuss options. Okay, would, have you got a family member? No. Would you want to give them away to someone? And you could leave a trust fund, but the lawyer will advise you all this. And then we just said, what about, the option would be that no one, for those of you that are animal lovers, look after your animals like you do. In fact, probably look after them better than my husband. And so he decided in the end, I believe, we don't make wills, that he was going to have his cats euthanized with him and then because otherwise he said no one would look after them, they would cost so much money. And that was just a weight lifted off his head. And then I don't know who he left the rest of his thousands of dollars to, but it's all about getting your affairs in order as much as you can, covering off your bases, putting it aside, and then just carrying on with life, really, like, you know, making it easier for your loved ones once you pass away. I do recommend you get it out every year and just have a look. Like I say, for those friends and family you don't want to include anymore, get it changed, scrub them off, threaten the children, get them written out. So administrator is the person who manages the stuff once you're passed away, beneficiary usually. So anyone over 18 should make a will. Once again, you know, as soon as you're 18, if you have assets, I don't need to go into that too much. So there the thing. So if you've made a will and then got married, then that automatically voids that will. It's no longer valid, so you need to make another will, unless you've made that will in contemplation of marriage. So if you've still got your will from your first wife and you're now on to your second, then that will be if you've married. So you need to make a up-to-date will. Like I say, funeral, burial, I would suggest you make your family aware of what that is before, you know, because they're not likely to get your will out probably until after that's happened. Testamentary guardians for children, if you have children. Once again, directions for donation of body parts, but once again, it's usually dealt with before the will's even got out, so that should be something you let your attorney know, your welfare attorney. So to be valid, it does need to be signed in the presence of two witnesses who must be in the same room and sign at the same time. As you can imagine, during COVID, that was potentially difficult with the requirements of distancing and not being able to go anywhere. So they actually brought in a quick law that did allow witnessing to be done via AVL. So a lawyer could be in another somewhere else, and that's obviously not no longer relevant, but that's interesting, isn't it, that they had to quickly do that, because otherwise you could have two people in the room, three of you in a room to witness your will. So they had to do that. So and you obviously have to have capacity when you make the will, which was the same with the EPOAs, by the way. I didn't think I covered that off. So yeah, it has to be by, and you need to be very careful with your will. So this is why the lawyers keep it. If you make a will and there's anything wrong with it, once it applies to the courts for probate, so or letters of administration, probate is it's over $15,000, they look at it, and if there's anything dodgy, they won't accept it. So for instance, if you've got, if it's stapled and it could be look like there's a missing page or there's another staple mark in it, the court could reject it. So that's why the lawyers keep it usually in a nice little sealed. Make sure there's no marks in it so that if it's contested, there's nothing there to show that it could have been fiddled with or not the genuine will. You can have anyone basically as a witness as long as they're not the beneficiary in it. You can change your will at any time, like I've said. If it's a small change, they'll just maybe do a codicil, which may not be quite as expensive, but usually if you engage a lawyer, it's going to be, they've still got to do the initial letters of engagement that they do and stuff anyway, so. So every time you make a new will, it gets rid of the old one. So your latest will is always going to be the valid will. Okay. Hopefully I've covered that off. I strongly recommend that you use a lawyer. Unless you really can't afford it, then you just can do an at-home will, and there's plenty of options these days with that.
Are there pros and cons to getting a lawyer from downtown somewhere? Using the public trust.
Oh, that's it. People either like public trust or they don't they? And I used to work for public trust. I started off my legal career as public trust. Because to make a will, they should follow the same ethical guidelines. And to be fair, we can't refer people at community law. We don't refer to anyone, but I know that Petrol Guardian are very competitive with their prices, so potentially they may be cheaper for whatever reasons, but there's no disadvantage to using. The only thing, and I don't think they do this anymore, is when I did work for Public Trust, I said before that they'll charge on a time and attendance basis if they administer your estate, but Public Trust did used to do it on a tier basis. I don't know if you guys remember that. So if Mum died and if she had 100,000 or under, then the definite cost was this in assets. and oh, if it's 150, the cost was this. So they gathered up all your assets to decide whether or how much there was, and that's how they charged. Don't know if they still do that now. It could be something you ask when you make your will, how much do you charge? But like I say, you can always take it somewhere else to administer the estate or whoever survives you. But there's no... they should still make a valid will, so whoever you use as a lawyer should still be fine. Oh, any questions?
If you want to include bequests, what's a good way to do that? Specify a sum or a percentage or to some charity?
Yeah, however you wish. There's a certain clause that you do use as the proper wording that the lawyer should help you with the bequest, and it covers off about receipts and stuff as well. So they will have that wording, and obviously that's whatever you want it to be. So actually, just to cover off, so this part of estate administration is the other lot of phone calls that I get. If my mum's passed away and she doesn't have a will and she's got debts, the survivor is not liable for those debts. Okay, so no one is liable for the deceased person's debts if they're the deceased's debts. Do you get that?
Yeah.
Okay, so if I'm the wife and the debt is a fridge that's in my house that I've still got, then yes, that becomes my debt because I've got the asset, or they could come and get the asset. But if my husband had a credit card debt that was just his debt that I didn't know about, I'm not liable to pay for it. So we get a lot of children ringing up and their father's passed away or their mum's passed away and they've got debts and they're worried, they are not liable for them. But you would be careful if you're signing up for the funeral account, and maybe that would be questions and things that the funeral chap that's going to come and talk to you would cover off, because you don't want to sign up, because basically then you're a consumer, you've signed up for something you've agreed to that you may then have to pay for, but their debts that they've incurred during their lifetime you shouldn't have to pay for. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure that didn't cover that off. Yes.
What about executors? How liable are they for debts, etc.?
So what happens in your estate? Good question. Lady asked how liable are the executors. Executors' job is to gather in your assets, whether they do it or the lawyer does it. They pay, so they've got your assets, which is the money you have. They pay any debts you have, and that's usually the first thing is a funeral account. They then tribute any money towards any debts, and then the rest gets distributed as per the will. The executor's role, as in any role, like the attorney and enduring power of attorney, is to follow those wishes, and they're governed by the Administration Act. So there's legal ways. They can't just decide, oh, well, I'm not going to pay that, I'm not going to pay that. That's why the lawyers usually do it. So they would gather in the assets, pay the debts, and if they found that they had distributed money wrongly or not correctly, then you'd have to try and challenge that through court. But they have laws that they're meant to follow in regards to estate administration.
What if there are insufficient funds?
Are
the executors liable then?
No one's liable for any deceased person's debts. So if there is no... So a lot of the time my phone calls are dad passed away, had no will, and assets are under $15,000, but he's got debts. So what I tell them to do is they'll get a death certificate, and then they contact, usually the bank, but if so, you contact their power company and say, well, I'm the living relative, he had no assets, it was under $15,000, so there's no letters of administration, and they'll get them to do an affidavit. Then if there's any money, yes, they have to apply. If not, that debt would have to be written off.
What about mortgages?
Mortgages is a, well, if you own a house, so what about mortgages? Obviously, if there's still a living person with that mortgage, then they're liable for it. If there's not a mortgage and the house is going to the kids will then need to decide whether they sell the house, pay the mortgage, get the balance, or how that's all going to work. It'll be different. It is a debt, but of course they'll have a house. The house will be collateral that is secured for that mortgage, so they will have to pay the mortgage. Otherwise, they sell the house to pay the mortgage. Good point. Different debt, but because that's secured debt. And that could happen with a car too. If there's a car that's got a loan over it in the security, then you would have to either give the car in or pay that debt because you've got the car. Does that make sense? Does that answer those questions? Just, I want to read something out to you. This is by one of my favourite authors that I found, Jodi Picoult. Have a conversation with your family about your end-of-life wishes while you are healthy. No one wants to have that discussion, but if you do, you'll be giving your loved ones a tremendous gift, since they won't have to guess what your wishes would have been, and it takes the onus of responsibility off them. That was Jodie Picot. And it will is a real gift, because I see the people that bring up my work, and they don't know what they would have wanted, and they're distressed, upset, bickering as family members, because they all have different views of what would have been done and what they thought mum or dad might not have wanted. So I think for those that you leave behind, you are doing them a gift by making a will. Give it to them as their Christmas present this year. But, you know, I see the repercussions of it, and you say, you know, oh, it won't happen to me, but it happens to the best of families, and it really is quite sad. And I always get that, oh, it's not about the money, it's about the principle. Damn well, it's about the money. Sorry. Depends what's in the will about how distribution is made if a person has died. So back in the days when I did do wills at the law firm, we had what was called normal husband and wife wills, but I don't know if you get that anymore. That it used to be your first marriage, kids and grandkids, and so husband and wife would give it to each other, go to their kids and then to their kids over. And so it wouldn't necessarily go to the spouse. Depending on how it's left now, it would carry over into the children's or grandchildren's. So it all depends on the wording as to how it's distributed. So if you did make a will a while ago, it may be best to get it out to have a look. Have you got grandchildren that may not be covered off, or children that may, or people you don't want in it as well? Any other questions? Oh, one in the back. Yeah. I'll come back.
If a partner dies and you've got the property, notwithstanding what you said a minute ago, there are ongoing costs if you stay with the house. There's rates, there's power, there's gas, there's internet, and so on and so forth. So you ask your wife, a lot of you stay in that house.
Yes, a good question. That, like, if you're given a life interest, going back to if you're given a life interest so you're allowed to live in that house, that life interest clause in the will usually says that you are responsible for maintenance rates. And that's where that poor old lady that rang me up couldn't afford it anymore. She couldn't afford to pay the rates, and you couldn't afford to keep this big villa. Couldn't sell it because she wasn't allowed to buy another home. So you'd want to make sure these days, you really want to think about the consequences of, you know, what may or may not happen. Especially, you know, if you're going to a rest home or need a smaller thing. Am I out of time? Pretty much, nearly. One more question, you had your hand up before.
If you appoint a person from outside the family as executor of your will, can you also leave a bequest to them in the will?
Yeah, you can do whatever you like. You can put whatever you like in your will, whether or not it will be contested, which we don't know and you won't be here to worry about, as to what happens. But you can put what you like in your will. And you can also make a memorandum of wishes to go with it, so if you're not clear, you could say, well, and I wish this to be done. So I have a joke to finish up with to lighten the mood. A couple left their attorney's office after meeting to discuss the presentation of their wills. On the drive home, the following conversation takes place. The husband said, "You know, honey, I've been thinking if I die, I don't want you to be alone. I want you to get remarried. And really, there's no reason for you to sell the house, so it's okay for you and your new husband to live in our house. And come to think of it, we have two fine cars, so I wouldn't have a problem with him driving my car. In fact, I wouldn't have a problem with him using my tools, my fishing rods, or our lawnmower. There's just one thing that would bother me. I just don't want him using my golf clubs. That would be too much for me, so just sell them in a garage sale, okay?" To which the wife responded, "I wouldn't worry about that, honey. He's left-handed." Thank you. So don't... actually, I do just need to make something clear, which I didn't say, and because I see the pile has got low. The information about wills, this is what I've basically been trying to cover off today. This is not a will. This, if you are going to a lawyer because you haven't made a will before, this is the information that they will require, which will help save time and money, maybe money, when you go to the lawyer. By filling this in does not give you a will, but it gives you some things to think about if you are making one. Just want to make that clear. It is at the bottom, but I didn't point that out. Thank you. You've been a great audience. If... you belong to other groups that you want us to come and talk to about any sorts of different things, please contact us. I love getting out of the office and doing this sort of thing, so please get in touch and we'll come and talk. Thank you.
Chairperson of the Manawatu Youth Brigade, and it is my personal responsibility to thank April for this entertaining, actually, for a wonderful presentation that really got our series off to a great start. Not as gloomy a topic as it might have been in other hands, so thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
That was really good. I have here a small gift for you, a token and a very interesting book about the Q3A.
Oh, thank you. I did look up before I came about what it was all about. So, yeah, and I'm an avid reader. Thank you very much.
Very good. So, once again, can we thank our speaker?